Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I woke up and I was going to wake him up and he was gone.
You know, it had been someone who knew both boys from, you know, the training or from the school. Could it have been a teacher? Could it have been a, you know, who would it have been?
I'm left with all these questions, you know, I have no idea.
There's definitely something going on. If there was something that drastic happening where my son felt unsafe to come home, he would call. He would call. Without a doubt, he would call. If he had gone off somewhere, he would have called. If he was stranded somewhere and couldn't get home, he would call.
Someone has to know something.
These people are not just falling off the face of the earth. If you're missing, you're missing. It doesn't matter what the circumstances or how anyone tries to classify them. Because if a loved one don't know where their loved one is, then that person is missing. And we need to pay attention and focus on that, bringing them back home.
Hello, and welcome to episode 54 of The Vanished. In this week's investigation, we looked into the disappearance of 16-year-old Enrique Rios and 17-year-old Elijah Moore. Enrique's mom, Lola, last saw him around 9 p.m. on October 17, 2016, before she went to bed for the evening in their home in Esparto, California. Elijah was last seen on November 4, 2016 at a check cashing store in Woodland, California. Enrique and Elijah are friends and both attended a very small work program at their school. Law enforcement initially labeled both boys as runaways, but their families don't believe that they would have just taken off. This is Enrique and Elijah's story.
Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500.
I was contacted by a listener several weeks ago when Enrique had been missing for just 10 days. I added him to my schedule, but at that point my schedule was booked well into the new year. A few weeks later, the same listener reached out again and informed me that Enrique's friend Elijah had vanished too. I went online and could not find a single article about either boy. As I sat on this information, I started to feel a sense of urgency to cover their stories. It is scary enough to have one person go missing, but how odd is it to have two friends disappear in such a short period of time? I made the decision to bump their stories up and cover them immediately. Imagine if your child went missing and law enforcement was telling you that they had more important things to handle. Both families have been doing everything they can to try to locate Enrique and Elijah, or at least get the word out that they're missing. They have been sharing their stories on social media and even going door to door looking for answers. I spoke with Enrique's mom, Lola, and she gave me some background on Enrique and the school program that both he and Elijah were in.
Well, he just recently started working and attending a new high school, and they've been giving him like a really great opportunity. So he only has to go to school for 4 hours a day in the morning. And then in the afternoon, he goes to work from 12 to 4. He's been getting straight A's in his new school. He loves being able to work and get his own paycheck and buy his own stuff. So, I mean, him and his friend Elijah, they were both so excited when I took them to get their first check to get cashed. And they said, "We're never going to leave this job. This job is so cool. I can't believe we're getting paid to go to school." This is how they looked at it, you know? So I don't see that they would just kind of walk away and not want to come back to the opportunities that they were so happy to have, you know. It's something that it's a program where only 15 children are selected. They have to do an interview to get into the program, kind of like a job interview. And then both boys did the job interview and passed. So they started on the first day of school, which is like August 22nd. So it's on an actual school site, but they're through a different program. So they're in a portable, but they're kind of back, in the back of the school. And so it's an actual school, kind of like a continuation, but it's giving children, the opportunity to make money the legal way, the good way, showing them responsibility. It's a really good program.
Lola told me about the last time she saw her son.
So Monday, was the last day that I saw him. So Monday is the 17th. So, 'cause he still went to school that day. And then I came home from work in the evening. And then when I came home from work, we went to bed. I think I lay down around 9 o'clock. I said goodnight to him. He said goodnight, and he looked like he had his pajamas or his shorts that he wears to go to bed and a regular t-shirt, and he went to bed. And then I woke up on Tuesday morning and he was gone.
I need to mention that both boys have been placed on probation for minor offenses, and because of that, they were given the opportunity to prove themselves in this work/training program. By all accounts, they were enjoying the program and taking the opportunity seriously. Lola explained their typical morning routine.
Because we live in Esparto and he goes to school in Woodland. So every morning I would wake him up. Enrique, let's get ready. Let's go. So then me, Enrique, and his sister would go to Woodland. I'd drop her off at my mom's house for daycare. And then I would drop him off at school, and then I would go to work. So it was kind of like our morning routine where we would all get up and go. I would drop off my daughter first, then him, and then I would go to work. Because me and him, we work and go to school pretty close to each other.
Do you know if his phone's been used?
No, it hasn't. I've looked online. Through the phone records, the last time that he messaged me was that Tuesday morning when I was like, where are you at? I woke up and I was gonna wake him up and he was gone. And he finally messaged me back around seven-ish, I think, in the morning. And he said, oh, I'm sorry. I had come out to my friend's house over here in Woodland. I just woke up. I'm on my way to school right now. And I said, how are you going to go to school if you don't have your work clothes? Because they have to go to school in their work clothes.
Okay.
And I said, how are you going to go to school if you don't have your work clothes? And he says, oh, well, my friend, he has work clothes that he'll let me borrow. And I said, oh, you're at one of the kids from the program. You know, you're at their house. He said, yeah. So then, because the kids that are in that program are on probation. So it's giving them a second chance to be a better person in life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I contacted his probation officer, and I let him know that Enrique wasn't at home, that he didn't sleep at home, that he had left. And that he said that he had just woke up. He was at his friend's house. And the probation officer said, okay, well, I'll keep you posted when he gets here, let you know what time he gets here. He never showed up. And everybody else from the program did.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was just a text message from a random person that said that. I don't know if that was a text message from Enrique just to throw me off, to get him some footwork on to get wherever he was going, or I'm left with all these questions. You know, I have no idea.
She has been reaching out to Enrique's friends to see if they have any idea where he could be. In today's world, when someone goes missing, one of the first things we go to is their cell phone to see who they were last in contact with or where their phone last pinged. This is where Lola hit a major roadblock.
All of his friends that I spoke to, because I went through his call log, I had blocked his phone so he can only call like 10 people. So what he did was he had an app on his phone and he can text and call anybody he wants. Do you know what, I don't know what app it's called, but do you know what I'm talking about? It's like,
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So it kind of backfired on me because everybody's asking me, who was the last person he called? Who was the last person he contacted? And I literally, the last person he contacted was in August, because from the phone records, at least. And then after that was just like me, my mom, people that he could call. And so I went back in his call log and I called the people that he had called in August and asked every one of those people, because I'm sure those are his friends, you know, that he's called regularly with the app. No, not one person says that they've seen him. Not one person says that they know where he went or that he had any idea that he was leaving. When I posted his picture on Facebook, one person kept getting tagged. His name was, and supposedly he's Enrique's friend, but he, Marco, never responds to being tagged. I just don't understand how teams talk to each other all the time. I just don't understand how not one person, not one of his friends knows where he's at or where Elijah's at. And Elijah's mom said that she went and spoke with, I don't remember what the person's name was, but it's a teenager, one of their friends. And he had screenshot what Elijah supposedly said through Messenger to him. Mom looked at it and she's like, that doesn't look like what Elijah would write. It doesn't look like Elijah's writing, his lingo. You know, they have their own. We know how they write. And that the boy started crying and he said, I know that's not him. That didn't come from him. And the mom was like, why are you crying? Unless he knows something else, why would he be so emotional about, and the mom was trying to ask him questions and he was like, I don't know anything.
Lola told me about her interactions with law enforcement since her son went missing.
Detective Garcia will check in with me periodically. I have his number where I could text him, but, we're doing the footwork. I feel like we're distributing flyers. We're going around asking people. I don't think that that's really something that they're doing. They do have an open report. I've been wanting them to call the news. The detective is the one that has to initiate in calling the news. And he said that he did, that he told their media person to contact the news. But the only thing that I saw was an ad in the Daily Democrat through Facebook, and Yolo Sheriff posted instead of saying, you know, missing, they said missing runaway teen.
Yeah.
Enrique has been, and I'm like, really? I mean, people are going to see runaway and they're going to be like, oh, just another runaway teen. Who cares? I got a Facebook message back from Evie Lambert. She's from KCRA. And she said, I'm so sorry, but depending on whether they push it through to media, we cannot air this. And I was like, okay. I mean, I keep asking them to do it and I understand that they have their own rules, but when does it become more of like a missing person so where they can air it? I don't know why if it's law enforcement that's just not calling them. Detective Garcia said he pushed it through to his media personnel, and that's why it went through to Woodland, the Daily Democrat, and Yolo Sheriff. But why can't they call and ask the actual news to do an article? Not everybody has social media.
It's so bizarre to me that the two of them and their friends, and they go to the same school and they're in the same program, and then they go missing within such a short period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. That's what we're thinking too. We're like, someone has to know something. The kids have to know if the boys were saying they were planning on going somewhere or if they were going to meet someone. I don't know. They have to know something, but nobody's saying anything.
She shared one thing that she thought could have possibly led to the boys being targeted.
I don't know, like if someone knew that these boys were getting checks and I just don't know what to say, because Enrique was scared. He said that one day he was at a party and that some kid saw him with his money and that they were trying to take his money away from him. And I kind of asked him a little bit. He didn't really want to say much more, but he said that he had taken off running because someone was chasing him and trying to, he feels like he doesn't like to say people are trying to beat him up. He's like, Mom, I can protect myself. I can, you know, I'm tough or whatever the kids say. But he, someone was trying to take his money away from him. I don't know if it was a teenager, because he just wouldn't give me any more information.
Law enforcement has labeled Enrique as a runaway. His mom explained to me why she feels like this is so out of character for him.
Yeah, because if even if they did leave on their own free will, they haven't called. They haven't just said, hey, I keep telling my husband, and Ricky gets embarrassed when I talk to him in front of his friends or whatever. You need a team. So why doesn't he just call with a private number with an unknown, you know, caller ID and say, Mom, can you please stop embarrassing me? This is, you've got my face all over the place. People are saying that I'm missing. I'm fine. My face is all over Facebook, all over Instagram. Can you just knock it off? I'm fine. He's not doing that. He didn't take any of his stuff. Him and his sister have an incredible bond. I mean, they'll play all day long, and he won't get tired of playing with her. And he hasn't even called or anything to see how she's doing, at least. Nothing.
Yeah, and that's really out of character for him, right?
Yeah, I mean, when they're home together, if she wants to play with him, he'll put his stuff aside. And even if he moans about it, he'll play horseback or whatever she wants to play. They run around and they play whatever she wants to play. And it's just, he hasn't even called to see how she's doing.
None of Enrique's friends have been able to provide any clues as to where he may be. If he took off, he didn't mention any plans to anyone, or at least no one who has come forward to say that he did. There really doesn't seem to be much to go on in his case, at least not that we have access to, and it doesn't appear that law enforcement is doing much either. From what we can tell, he left his home on the night of the 17th, and if you believe that the texts were really from him, he went to a friend's house and disappeared from there. Also, if you believe that the text messages were from him, the friend that he was with was on the same work program at school, and everyone but Enrique showed up to school that day. So did he really stay with a friend from the program that night? Was it really Enrique who sent those messages to his mom? These are all questions that I have been wondering about. That brings us to Elijah's disappearance. He was last seen at a check cashing store in Woodland, California on November 4th, 2016. After I spoke with Lola, I called Elijah's mom, Alicia, to get more information about his disappearance, and I asked her if it was out of character for him as well.
Yes, extremely out of character. Extremely. He's always been a mama's boy. Always been a mama's boy. And so, you know, not just myself knowing that this is out of character for him, but also my family members. I have a 19-year-old son, and they were really close. So if Elijah had not have called me, he would have called his brother.
One thing that I had wondered about was whether Elijah had seemed to know anything about Enrique's disappearance in the 3 weeks between when they each went missing, and she said that he seemed totally clueless. We know that Elijah was last seen at a check cashing store. Alicia went to the store to see if she could get more information from the employees.
Well, when I went to the check cashing to find out what time Elijah had come in specifically to cash his check and who was there, was he with anyone? The check cashing people told me that he was there with another kid from the school who was also cashing his check, a Hispanic kid.
This business has surveillance cameras, and we know that most businesses don't keep the footage indefinitely. You would think that there would be some sense of urgency to obtain the footage to identify who Elijah was with when he was last seen.
I asked them that day if I could look at the camera or could I get a name of the kid who was there cashing his check alongside of my son. They told me that they couldn't give me that, but they could give it to law enforcement. So when I told the investigator, you know, that that's the last place that I know that my son was at, the investigator said that he would take, you know, he would look into it. But when I went back on Thursday to see if he had made it, the lady, she remembered me and she was like, no one came, no one called.
Elijah had called Alicia from the check cashing place that day, which was the last time that she ever spoke to her son.
I was trying to call his phone all that day because he had called, like I said, he called from the check cashing. He's like, Mom, I need my social security number. So I can cash my check. I gave it to him and I, you know, just kind of like ragged him like, you still don't know your social security number yet after all the checks you cashed? And we, you know, just laughed. I said, well, you better remember it now. And he was like, okay, Mom, I got it. And he was going to bring some money home. And he said, I got you, Mom. I'll be there in a little bit. So he never made it here. And when I called his friend Andre, Andre said, yeah, Elijah was supposed to meet me at my job on my break. Let me call and see where he's at. So he said that he didn't talk to Elijah at that point. And then I told him to call Elijah back when he got off work. He called Elijah back and he said that he got an inbox, a text message from my son. But the inbox message, the wording didn't even sound like my baby. And when I showed it to my 19-year-old son, he was like, Mom, that's not how Elijah even writes.
Alicia has been frustrated with the lack of assistance from law enforcement.
They've done nothing. I was, you know, just riding down the street the other day, just looking, you know, maybe I could see him or see, something. And I saw a police officer and I asked her if she could check into it. And she got on the radio and she called in and she was like, it's being treated as a runaway situation. Here's the thing. My son has never run away. He's never, you know, had a reason to run away. He's never, even uttered, I'm leaving, you know, even as a little kid, never, I'm leaving, I'm running away. Never any propensity to do anything like that. He was, I'm seriously like a mama's boy. So wherever I was at, wherever I've been, that's what he would want to do. Even when I was working at the shelter, the mission, he would come up there. Mom, you know, he'd bring he brought a friend one time. He was like, Mom, can we volunteer? But just, he's never left home. And it's disheartening because I'm like, to you, you have your kids are at home. And here we have my child missing, and my child is everything to me, just like yours are to you. So if you took an oath to protect and serve, you're not doing any of that. When you label my child as a runaway, and I'm telling you that that is not his personality, that is not his MO. And if he were to have run away, then still, he's my missing runaway, my missing child.
Alicia told me about some leads that she has been trying to track down on her own.
I've called one of his friends in Sacramento, Jaheim, to see if Jaheim had heard from him. He said he hadn't talked to Elijah in a few weeks. I called his friend Andre, the one who he was supposed to meet that day at his job, and see if he had spoken with Elijah. He said he hasn't spoken with Elijah as well. Yesterday we went out, stayed out from noon till nighttime, trying to get any kind of information and passing out flyers, asking anyone for information. And one lady, I'm not sure how accurate it is, but she said that she saw my son Friday night at 3 a.m. Sitting on her stoop. And she said she knows him because he, you know, like always asking her for a cigarette. And she said she told him, no, you know, get up, you know, I'm not giving you a cigarette. You're a minor. But at 3 a.m., if that is true and she saw him, then what happened to him after that? I was trying to create a password reset on Google, because I know that he had his Facebook account, I'm sure, through the Google. And Google has a phone location. The only thing is I have to have his password. I'm trying to figure out how to get a password reset.
It is hard to imagine that it could just be one big coincidence that these two boys went missing and they are unrelated. I know that it set alarm bells off in my mind when I learned that they were both missing, were friends, and went to the same school.
It's very alarming. And I had, when I called the investigator, because I didn't know who the investigator was at that point, but I called the investigative unit and I spoke with the lady, and she told me, she said, I said, it's a coincidence, you know, that these two kids go to school together, they work together, and they're both missing. They were friends and they're missing. There's definitely a connection. She told me, well, I don't really see a connection. And that she would patch the story through to her sergeant, but they did have other priorities. So apparently the officer who had come in to do the missing persons report must have labeled it at that point as a runaway.
Alicia had a lot of the same concerns that I had. If they didn't leave on their own free will, which both families don't believe that they did, who would have had the motive to do something to them? When you look at their circles and where they overlap, could it have been something to do with someone in their program, a teacher? Who really knows? Alicia mentioned that Elijah was a bigger guy and knew some martial arts. She doesn't feel like he would have been an easy target for someone to just snatch right off the street.
So I was thinking, was it someone he knew and, you know, somewhat trusted, like steer him off somewhere, and he's thinking it's okay, and then when he gets there, something different.
Enrique and Elijah's families have been utilizing social media in an attempt to find out more information. I can tell you that the response to the preview video that I released several days ago has been huge. More people have seen that video than any other one that I've released so far.
And I've posted it on my Facebook page. I posted it Sunday night, and thousands of people have shared this story, you know, of my son missing and his friend missing. But still, no one has come forward like, hey, we saw him, you know, at such and such a time. We saw him here, and, you know, this, yeah, nothing. And now yesterday when we went out and the lady said that she saw my son at 3 a.m, I'm like, anything could have happened at 3 a.m, and no one here in this little town would have known.
Do you think it was really him that she saw? Are you pretty confident in her response to you?
I'm not confident. She's like, I could tell they were on drugs. I went back later that night we went back last night about 9 o'clock, and the lights in her house are out. You know, that like there's no electricity.
Nathan was able to get the following comment from the Yolo County Sheriff's Office regarding the investigation into Enrique's disappearance.
Now, because it's still an ongoing investigation and the case, I really can't provide you with too much information other than what is basically already out there. And I've been in contact with the mother, and we've, you know, followed different leads, but unfortunately, as of right now, we haven't located him, so... Okay. That's kind of where we're at right now.
All right. So the case is being actively worked. You have people out there actively looking for him.
Like I said, I've been in contact with the mother, and, you know, she's provided me different leads, and we've gone out to contact different people. We've gone out to different areas to search where he had supposedly been seen. But unfortunately, as of right now, we haven't located him.
He also contacted the check cashing business that Elijah was last seen at.
We're working on a case right now involving two young men who disappeared from the Woodland, California area. One of whom came into your store and cashed a check. The mother, Alicia, has been having a lot of difficulty getting police to do anything about it. The police have classified both of them as runaways. And
fortunately, we have a very strict privacy policy. I am unable to release any information regarding any of our customers or transactions.
Can't even release a still of...
I can't even let you know whether or not they were in my store or not. If the police came, I can discuss information with them, but I can't release any information to anybody else.
Alright, so the police haven't...
have a police report filed.
Okay, so the police haven't come yet.
I can neither confirm or deny anything like that. Honestly, there's nothing that I can disclose to you.
Okay, great.
Okay, bye. Have a wonderful day.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. You aren't sleeping and you're stressed out. That's how it was for me, so I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. Their deep sleep gummies are amazing. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In two non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I have a 20% discount to get you started. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code VANISHED for 20% off. That's cbdistillery.com, code VANISHED. cbdistillery.com.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Nathan reached out to the Black and Missing Foundation. He spoke with Derica Wilson, who is the co-founder, president, and CEO. She offered a lot of great insight and advice, not only for this case, but so many others that we have covered.
Let me give you a little bit of background about the organization and, the role that we actually play, because neither me or my sister-in-law, Natalie, we didn't have to deal with anyone in our family going missing. However, with my law enforcement background, I served on the police force for 10 years, and Natalie is a public relations specialist. We saw a need when it came to persons of color going missing. And what really sparked the birth of Black and Missing Foundation, there was a young lady by the name of Tamika Houston, who went missing from my hometown of Spartanburg, South Carolina. And it was really painful watching her family struggle to garner local news, much less national. And months later, Natalie Holloway disappeared. And of course, the rest is history, because we know that her face was plastered all over every news cycle. And so what I started doing was doing some research. And during that time, back in 2008, when we birthed the organization, we found that 30% of missing persons in the United States were persons of color, and that number has since increased, and it's continuing to rise. It's now 40%. And, you know, being in law enforcement, I've witnessed how the response, or I should say the lack of response, is given to minority families when a person of color, a child that's under the age of 17, go missing. They are typically classified as runaways, and therefore they're not receiving the Amber Alert or those additional resources to even help look for them. Yet when, you know, Becky go missing, you have every available resource, local law enforcement, as well as the FBI, and you have the media coverage. They tend to say that the sensation is there in trying to find these missing people. So we started the organization with the hopes of
provide an equal opportunity for all people who go missing, because, you know, missing persons is not a Black issue. It's not a white issue. It's an American issue. And we also have to be mindful that human trafficking is a multi-billion dollar industry that's occurring right here on U.S. soil. And so, you know, we've seen in so many instances where people have been reported missing, whether they were children or adults, and they have been caught up in this world known as human trafficking. And that's why there are so many task forces that have been created to try to combat this issue. And so we really need to change the mindset and the reporting structure, you know, as far as how law enforcement take these cases, you know. And that's another thing with us, you know, we, if you're missing, you're missing. It doesn't matter what the circumstances or how anyone tries to classify them, because if a loved one don't know where their loved one is, then that person is missing, and we need to pay attention and focus on that, bringing them back home.
So what do you suppose makes persons of color more at risk for going missing, or what accounts for the high number of persons of color who go missing?
Well, there's a lot of different situations that come into play. I just spoke about the human trafficking, domestic violence. There is a correlation with persons going missing in domestic violence situations, mental health. We've had so many cases that we've personally worked on, and there was mental health issues. And some of these symptoms, what I'm discussing, the reason that these people are going missing is something that's often swept under the rug in the minority community. You know, we're in denial. You know, we don't want to talk about these issues that are plaguing our community, such as domestic violence and mental health issues and human trafficking, because people think that even with human trafficking, this is happening in third world countries, and it's happening right here. And so it is our responsibility as a community to educate one another, to get involved. And it's not just, you know, the responsibility of law enforcement. It's the responsibility of all of us. It's law enforcement. It's the media. It's the community. One of the stronger messages that we also send is, you know, tapping into our faith-based communities, because we have to go to them. They don't typically come to us, so we need to go where there's strength in numbers and getting the backing and the support. Because if someone goes missing, we need all boots on the ground to search, to pass out flyers, you know, to be that phone tree, to call, knocking on doors. We got to get back to the basics, because these people are not just falling off the face of the earth. And it's just so startling that the numbers continue to increase. And let me just say this also, when it comes to a person going missing, it's not considered a crime if there's no circumstantial evidence. So especially when it's adults, you know, law enforcement look at adults as coming and going as they please. But you know your loved one, and, you know, why should you have to wait, you know, 24 or 48 hours, depending on what the laws are in certain particular states. So we also need to work with our elected officials as well. And you know, if your loved one is missing, it should be able, a police report should be able to be taken immediately, like it is in Washington, D.C. and Illinois.
Do you think police have an obligation to make sure that the person is at least okay?
I think a welfare check, absolutely, absolutely.
You know, in terms of, you know, the disparity in the coverage and the disparity in the police resources, law enforcement resources that go into, you know, finding one group of people over another, I mean, what's the underlying thing for that, do you think? I mean, is it as, you know, conscious as somebody making the decision to say, oh, this person's a person of color and I'm just not going to invest the resources, or is it something more subconscious?
Well, I can only speak from the experiences that we've had, because there's just no statistical research out there as to why some do what they do. I do have, you know, I've spoken publicly about the training aspect when it comes to missing persons. I can honestly say when I was in their police academy, we spent
one hour on missing person cases. So sometimes it's not that they don't want to do it. They just don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I think excessive or enhanced training should be spent on that. Also, when it comes to media coverage, you know, we have numerous partnerships with media outlets, but let me tell you, this has been a long road for us as well. You know, we've knocked on many doors, especially in the very beginning, and, you know, we've been turned away. And this is after the families have come to us and said, you know, we need your help. We've went to these media outlets, they're not taking the stories. And when you look at the decision makers, it doesn't represent us. So the decision makers in the newsroom typically they're typically, you know, middle class white men, and we've also been told, you know, the stories are just not sensational. I've heard, you know, when it comes to missing persons of color and they're over the age of 18, so they're considered adults. They associate their disappearance with some sort of criminal activity, whether it's drugs, prostitution, whatever the case may be. And that really downplays the fact that the person is missing. Mm-hmm. And it just turns the focus on something negative. Mm-hmm. And so those are just certain issues that we have to deal with just to try to get coverage for someone that's missing.
So for these two moms in California, are there any special channels that they can look to and to get the word out about their sons?
The advice that I would give them is the same advice that I give so many families that we deal with. That reporting officer that took the initial case isn't the say-all be-all. You have to follow up, and you have to go straight to the top. And I don't mind you sharing our contact information with the families because that's what we're here for. You know, we build relationships with law enforcement. I'm a former cop and, you know, I'm able to relay and take the emotions out, things that the family may not be able to relay or certain things that they may not know. But they really need to follow up, push through and get to the top to speak with the chief, the commanders, to let them know this is a characteristic of my loved one, my child, and my child did not run away. And I'm not going to allow you to classify my child as a runaway. And mm-hmm. as I indicated, I mean, in so many cases, they are classified as runaways. And at the end of the day, that's just not the story.
One of the teens who went missing went into a check cashing store with another teen, cashed his paycheck. The mother went into the store to see if she could view the surveillance footage, you know, to see if she could identify who this other person was, to see if, you know, maybe he had mentioned, you know, he was going somewhere or meeting up with somebody. And the store had, well, she was told the store had a policy against showing footage to, non-law enforcement. And we called and got the same spiel about the policy. And then, you know, 12 days, last I checked, it was 12 days after the kid went missing, and the police still had not gone and gotten that surveillance footage. I mean...
Wow. And so time is of the essence. I don't know what their cycle is as far as that surveillance, but has the mother pushed forward to speak with the top commander, the top official there, and reached out to the elected leaders, the mayor?
Yeah, I know she went to the mayor's office. I know she did or was planning on doing that the last I spoke with her. I mean, that just really struck me as really callous to have that information and not.
I can give you two examples of, and this happened in New York City, two separate cases of women that went missing. The first young lady, she was captured on surveillance for the subway. And New York police was not responsive. The detective that initially had taken the case. And mom was very distraught. She contacted us. We had the case reassigned to another detective who went out and obtained the footage before the footage no longer existed because she was with a young man. I mean, there were witnesses that had came forward and said, oh yeah, I do recall seeing her. She was with someone. I mean, at the end of the day, this young girl was being held against her will. But the fact of the matter is, law enforcement at that time didn't feel that it was important to take the case or to follow up, you know, by saying, oh, well, she'll return. I mean, she's probably just hanging out with her friends, so making assumptions. But this child was missing for 5.5 months, and, you know, we were able to find her and reunite her with her family. Fast forward 2 years later, another young lady out of New York was seen on a Greyhound footage. And so, of course, mom did the same exact thing and tried to go up and view. They would not allow her to view, which that's just standard. I mean, like I said, being a former cop, you know, that's just something that they do not do. But the police was kind of relaxed about going up there, and mom went to the top commander and also the mayor. And next thing I know, that video was pulled. And we've even used that video with some of the media outlets that we had reached out to, and they were showing that. I mean, unfortunately, that young lady is still missing, and we're talking about, like, 4 years later.
Yeah.
But that video existed, and we were able to get that video. So, you know, reaching out to the mayor, elected officials to help, going right to the top, you know, with law enforcement, you know, to get these cases out there, the distributing flyers, going to the area where her son was last seen. So, you know, having that check cashing place to put up a missing persons flyer, you know, inside or around that particular establishment, because that can jog someone's memory. Yeah. And just to kind of take it back to the first case that I was speaking of, which, they didn't want to go to the subway immediately and get the surveillance. We had broadcast this particular young lady on several of our media partners. And that's why we always say that coverage is so vital, because she was getting, we had her in the newspaper, we had her on the local news in New York. You know, we were getting that traction. And, you know, if you stop showing things, you know, people tend to typically forget, you know, or think, oh, okay, well, maybe the person was found. So we partnered up and went on, The View with this particular young lady that was missing. And so happened where this, vital citizen, very vital, vigilant citizen happened to see that segment on The View, where she had seen no other coverage at all, you know, not on the news, although it was planned, she just missed it, you know, and she didn't, she said she doesn't typically read the newspaper, but she saw that particular day, and she knew exactly, she called in anonymously, and I received the call. She called in, and this is 15 minutes after the segment aired, so I went to New York to tape it. It aired that following day. Right after it aired, 15 minutes later, this lady called and gave the address to where this young lady was.
Oh,
and yes,
incredible.
She was being held against her will, but she was missing for 5.5 months. So that's why it's important to continue to push that out there so people can see, because you never know who may hold the key to finding, you know, your loved one. So my advice is to continue to follow up with law enforcement, continue to circulate flyers around that area, because, you know, chances are there could have been someone in there that was in line before him or after him and may remember something, even if it's down to, like, some shoes or a vehicle that the person was driving. You just never know. Something could have stood out to someone, and it just jogs their memory. And social media has been proven to be vital as well. You know, continue to circulate it, because we can't always wait on the news cycle.
Yeah.
So there's so many people. We can reach so many people. And I would ask you, just to see if we even have the two young men in our database, I ask you to respond to the email with me and just give me their names and if you have a picture of them, And we can circulate it as well. So not only will we circulate it with our on our website, but we also circulate with our media partners as well and see what we can do to help these families, both families.
Absolutely. Are there any indicators that law enforcement would look for in terms of somebody who may have been abducted to become part of a sex trafficking network?
And so, you know, a lot of times with computer crime detectives, they look at the activity that's going on social media, because social media, I mean, this day and time, Nathan, it's a blessing and it's a curse.
Mm-hmm.
And so, one of the things that I will take it back and say, what we do, we encourage parents to create fictitious, because we're being proactive, create fictitious, accounts to see how much information your child is giving away. I also think just seeing what they're doing, the day-to-day conversations, because, you know, we have the sex trafficking, modern-day slavery, and we also have the labor trafficking, which we typically see a lot in the Hispanic community as well. You know, getting the work and paying them maybe $12 a month, but yet you're still holding them hostage. So, you know, you just start looking at some of those behaviors, see who some of their friends are. I mean, it's one of those sophisticated enterprises, you know what I mean? Like, there's really nothing more than typically just looking at seeing what some of the behavior is going on, looking at who's in the area, you know, as far as like offenders, sex offenders and things of that nature, just to kind of go by. And then also looking at that general area to see, is there a pattern of like a number of girls going missing in this particular area within a certain time frame? For example, I know there was an article that came out in New York a few months ago where there was about 13 girls, you know, between the ages of like 13 and 16 that went missing. And they tied that to, you know, possible human trafficking. You know, we can't say for sure, but it's tied to, you know, and you just kind of look at what that pattern looks like. You know, who's going missing? You know, what are their ages? What is the actual location? Like, what is the radius between the area where this, you know, girl A went missing and girl B? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Also thinking about gang activity. That's another huge issue, you know, when it comes to missing persons. And in fact, we were working on a case with the family where we had two young girls that were missing, and one of them was killed trying to save her friend. They were just walking, and this gang tried to abduct one of the girls, and the friend was trying to fight them off, and they killed her, and her friend's body was found about a mile away from where her body was. And so it's just, you know, there's a variation of reasons why people are going missing. But I just think that, you know, as a community, if we see something, we should say something.
Yeah.
And, you know, reporting things anonymously. I mean, you don't have to compromise your identity, you know, to save someone's life.
Yeah. And the reason why I asked that is because both of these boys went to the same school. And they were part of the same work program. The work program was about 15 kids. It was for at-risk teens. They had gotten into some really minor trouble earlier and became part of this program. And this program has a variety of programs, including ones for adults, convicted felons, for a whole assortment of crimes. And what will you make of, you know, that they went missing from the same program? They were in the same program and they both went missing weeks apart.
I think they need to really look at the program and see who may have been in contact with these kids. I think that's a great start for law enforcement. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, are they holding their past against them to dictate how they handle the situation. You see what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know this in the beginning. You're just sharing this with me, but they, as I indicated, and it's just historical, you know, a historical practice, if there has been some sort of activity that can be deemed negative, it downplays the case in their eyes. And, you know, for yourself, you may read something and, you know, someone is missing, but then they want to focus on what the person did when they were in middle school. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which has no bearing as to why that person is missing today. It just really minimizes the case. And that message is sent to society where there just typically isn't a sense of urgency behind it.
These two boys, their cases are being handled by different law enforcement jurisdictions. One's a county sheriff, the other is a city police department. How does that, if there is a connection between the two cases, how might that complicate things?
Well, I think what they need to do is really partner, especially because they're from the same program. I mean, there could be, that's a common denominator. They're attending the same school. They're part of the same program, although they may live in different counties. I think the communication between law enforcement with the family, like, I'm not sure what the relationship is with the parents of the children, but if I was in that situation, I would be speaking to the chief of police, you know, and I would say, you know, look, my son is missing, but here's another case. My son's friend is also missing. The common denominator is that they attend the same school. They're in the same program. They went missing like weeks apart. And for the mother whose case is being handled by the sheriff, I would relay the same message. Is one, in your perspective, is one agency doing a little bit more than the other, or are they both kind of both straddling the fence, not really doing anything?
From what the mothers say, they're both kind of just straddling the fence. Both detectives from both agencies have seemed initially considered both to be runaways. I know one of them has recently been changed to being missing, but not in danger. So,
okay. And how old are the boys again?
16 and 17.
Okay. Okay.
So the one boy snuck out of his house after his mother went to sleep and hasn't been heard from since. The other boy disappeared after cashing his check a couple of weeks later.
And I'm assuming because law enforcement hasn't even taken the opportunity to go pull the video, I'm certain they haven't taken the opportunity to pull the phone records either to see the area where the phone last pinged.
Yeah, that's what we're assuming as well.
Okay. If you could do me a favor, too, because I really want to see what I can do to help this case. And one of the other issues that we face, and I've talked about it, is that the lack of media coverage. But with our partnership, media coverage also shines a spotlight on law enforcement as well. So if they're not doing anything and we have a story posted by one of our partners, like a reputable outlet, you know, and they start asking questions, it also gives it a sense of urgency, because I'm quite sure that there's nothing, if they were initially classified as runaways, I'm quite sure there's no outlet in Sacramento that's posting any kind of message about the boys being missing. Are they even on their website?
I know the sheriff posted something on its Facebook page. Woodland Police did send out a press release, but one of the mothers did contact the local station and was told that they only report on that kind of stuff if asked by law enforcement. So she went to law enforcement and they said, well, we sent out the press release. So that's the kind of back and forth she's been dealing with.
And that's frustrating. That is very
when your kid's missing, I can't even imagine.
Right. Okay. So if you can do me a favor, if you can send me, if there is a flyer, I want to make sure that we have it, but I'm also going to talk to, we have a partnership with News One. We also have a partnership with the Griot, which is part of MSNBC and Ebony. I'm going to work with our media partners to see if we can get a story out there for these mothers and, put some pressure on law enforcement to take more of a active stance and approach to work to find these boys.
Great. Great. I will send you all the information that I have.
Okay. Yep. If you can get me their full description, the dates that they're missing, their pictures, and we'll put something out on our social media page. We'll add them on our website, and then I'll send them right over to my partner, Natalie. Natalie works with all of our media partners to see what we can do and see if we can get a story out there.
Great.
Because like
great.
I said, you know, we've built so many different relationships, and so let's see what we can do to help these families. And also, I don't know if you know this, but once we put them on our website, there's a link at the bottom of their profile. It's a report a tip. And that's anonymous. So that's one of the reasons we know that there is a lack of trust when it comes to missing persons of color and law enforcement. So we've tried to cover all of those bases. And if someone submits a tip to us, not only do we share it with law enforcement, but we also share it with the family so they can ensure that law enforcement is following up on the tip.
Excellent. Great.
While listening to that interview, I found myself nodding my head in agreement with so many things that she said. I'm hoping that with their connections, we can really get the ball rolling here. There are just so many odd things going on. One thing that I keep going back to in my mind are those last communications from both Enrique and Elijah. They were text messages. Enrique's mom isn't sure that those messages were really from him on the morning of October 18th. And after Elijah's friend had called him, he received a text that no one believes was written by Elijah. They were friends, went to the same school, and were in the same very small program. It just blows my mind that law enforcement doesn't seem to see any kind of connection between their disappearances. I still have so many unanswered questions, too. Even if the boys did leave on their own, they are still minors and don't have the right to do so. Their families are desperate to find them, and at the very least, just to know that they're okay. If you have any information about the disappearance of Enrique Rios, please contact the Yolo County Sheriff's Department at 530-666-8282. And if you have any information about the disappearance of Elijah Moore, please contact the Woodland Police Department at 530-661-7800. That brings us to the end of episode 54. I would like to thank everyone who took the time to speak with us and for all of you who have listened. If you would like to contact me, I am on Twitter at TheVanishPod. I have a Facebook page and a group. There is a contact form on the website as well. I had a question from a parent of a missing man this week, and I would like to take the time to answer that for anyone who may be wondering the same thing. We do not charge families anything to cover their missing loved ones on the show. We have sponsors and donations from listeners that help us cover our production costs, so please feel free to contact me if you would like us to add your missing loved one to our schedule. Just a quick note, we are releasing an episode next week, but it will be slightly delayed due to the holiday. So with that, I hope everyone has a really great holiday, and we will catch up with you next week.
I don't know what else to do. I don't know. I mean, but I can't sleep. I can't sleep. I can't not know. The thought of not never finding out or not never knowing, I don't know if I could do that.
That's why I need the police to go a little faster. I mean, even if they are working with it, they need to, in Spanish, it's called ponerse las pilas, get it going. You know, you need to get it going right away, because time within the first 48 hours, there should have been a lot more done than what was done.
Yeah, I felt like because my son is black and because Enrique is Hispanic,
that they're not really, and we don't have money, that we're not taken seriously. That's how I feel. And I feel like if my son was blonde-haired, blue-eyed, if Enrique was blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and they're both friends and they both go to the same school and work at the same job site, that there would be more action. I'm being as proactive as I possibly can to try and stay hopeful and get out there and hit the streets and try and find my child. Because I feel like the police department, they're not going to do it. Woodland Police Department is a joke to me. I've called the FBI. The FBI told me that they took all the information, and they told me that they couldn't do anything unless the Woodland Police Department called them in. But I'm saying, why haven't, you know, anyone done anything? Why aren't they doing anything? So if they're not doing anything, to call the FBI in would be like putting themselves on blast and showing that they're not doing anything. What they're doing is they're chasing down homeless people, and they're chasing down people that are addicted to drugs, but they're not, you know, looking for these young kids. They're not going out asking questions. Yesterday when I went out, me and my family, we went out and we found some information, like people that my son had been seeing around. Found out that someone supposedly saw him at 3 a.m. And my family, myself, we're all like extremely worried because this is not his M.O.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.